Coming up next on Daddy on Board 91, juvenile diabetes rates are soaring, putting a barcode on your baby, and Green Lantern comes out of the closet. All this and more up next on Daddy on Board 91. Our show sponsor is Gazelle.com. Want to give you money for your used smartphone, tablet device, or other consumer electronic good. So if you're looking for fast payment, fair prices, and free shipping to unload your gadget or doohickey, you need to go over and see our great show sponsors at Gazelle.com. They're the industry leaders when it comes to radar detection, and they're our show sponsors, Cobra Electronics. Find out more about their entire line of detectors, GPS navigation, CB radios, and a whole lot more when you visit their website, Cobra.com. Welcome to Daddy on Board 91, parents hesitant, expectant, intrepid, and others as well, as long as you're not from Spain and Portugal. My name is Mike Quackenbush. I am a podcaster, parent, and professional wrestler, and I've got a bunch of stuff from the parent-o-sphere, which is a term I just coined for you right now. Let's start with the big story of this past week. It was published in USA Today and carried lots of other places, too, about juvenile diabetes. Diabetes and pre-diabetes have skyrocketed among our nation's young people. It's jumped from 9% in the year 2000 to 23% by the year 2008, a new study report says. These findings were reported in the journal Pediatrics, and they are very concerning, says lead author Ashley May, an epidemiologist. Epidemiologist. That's what it is. They study epidemics with the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. To get ahead of this problem, we have to be incredibly aggressive and look at children and adolescents and say you have to make time for physical activity, says Larry Deeb, former president of medicine and science for the American Diabetes Association. Of the two types of diabetes, type 2 accounts for more than 90% of these cases. In people with diabetes, of course, the body does not make enough of the hormone insulin, or it does not use it properly. Insulin helps glucose, or sugar, get into cells, where it is used for energy. If there's an insulin problem, sugar builds up in the blood, damaging nerves and blood vessels. Long-term complications of diabetes can include heart attack, blindness, kidney failure, nerve damage, and amputations. And everything on that list is bad. I just want to be really, really clear. Everything on there is bad. It is simply being said that people are, not that you can oversimplify this issue, really, or that you should, but that there is not enough exercise and physical activity in the nation's youth, and that it certainly seems to be what the outcry from the people who reviewed this recent report in Pediatrics are saying. Now, related to this, of course, because it's simply not a matter that is solely related to physical activity and exercise. There is something further to consider just about nutritional standards and everything else. And this related story about the Disney Corporation I thought was very, very interesting. Now, in this episode, we're going to talk about two very frightening things, one of which is the Disney Corporation, which is a huge, scary company we should all fear and dread. We're also going to talk about the U.S. government, which has already destroyed like all of our civil liberties and takes away everything of real value from us, despite the fact that they say that they're actually giving it to us. Let's talk about both these frightening entities on today's podcast, shall we? You may have heard this past week that Disney has announced that all products advertised on its child-focused television channels, radio stations, and websites will have to comply with a strict new set of nutritional standards that they're putting out. Many products currently advertising on Disney, for example, Capri Sun drinks and Kraft Lunchables meals, don't make the cut as they currently stand. Disney is also going to reduce the amount of sodium by 25% in the 12 million children's meals served annually at its theme parks, and they're going to create what they call fun public service announcements promoting child exercise and healthy eating. Now, on the surface, this sounds very positive, and I don't know what the subtext or bizarre undercurrent of this might be. I feel like there has to be an agenda, because as I said, Disney is frightening and evil. However, this sounds really good. So way to go, Disney. I got to give you a pat on the back there. Obviously, the fact that this is a massive conglomerate with huge marketing and media reach, especially at the key demographic of kids here, they are really able to influence this in a way, I think, that a lot of others simply could not. Until it comes out, of course, that they somehow are, there's some kind of benefit to them for these, the revenues are tied to these types of food products, or I don't know. Until that comes out, I gotta say, attaboy, Disney. I think you're doing something good, you big scary corporation. Way to go. Another story that was making the rounds this week was based on a brief appearance on the BBC program 60 Second Idea, which is a very interesting roundtable discussion about intriguing ideas. Science fiction writer Elizabeth Moon was a guest on 60 Second Idea about a week or so ago and put forth the idea about permanent barcodes on every human being out there. Now, this, of course, sounds like something right out of science fiction, does it not? But interestingly enough, I happen to be having a discussion at the post office just the other day with a mom who tracks her own son using some kind of thing on the iPhone. I don't know. I don't have an iPhone. But that, and perhaps having seen too many movies with the likes of Harrison Ford and Liam Neeson in them, the idea that, and these are real things, by the way, what I'm going to talk about here, that you could inject a trackable chip or whatever device into people so that they could never be lost, at first sounds like this horrific idea, right? You know, that we could be tracked anywhere that we go, like the loss of freedom and our liberties and blah, blah, blah. And of course, there were people from the American Civil Liberties Union that came right out and said, this whole idea is creepy. This is a terrible idea. They have grave concerns about it. When you get over that, this is why I think it's actually an okay idea. I'm going to tell you. Thank God, I do not know what it is like to have lost, otherwise misplaced, or heaven forbid, suffered through the abduction of my child. But if having whatever this thing injected into their shoulder, that's where I guess it goes, because I saw that on an episode of Law & Order that Bob Saget guested on. If having something like that, a tracking device, allows for, in those types of circumstances, for abducted children or people that are, I don't know, they're part of human trafficking rings or God knows what, for them to be retrieved, rescued, or otherwise returned to their homes, then I think it's not a bad idea at all. Now, I don't know how comfortable it might be, but if there was a fairly comfortable version of this, I don't know that I really object. I kind of like the idea. If for no other reason, then, I can only imagine what it must be like for a parent of an abducted child and what they must be going through when something like that, that type of device, would be like an instantaneous solution. Now, there are companies that make things along these lines. Positive ID is one of them, Data Key, and microchips. I can even remember once looking, after spending an evening searching Muhlenberg for a lost cat, that there was a version of that could be injected into a cat's body, and for like a fee of around $300 a year, you could just instantly log on to any site and see on a global positioning map the exact location of said lost cat. Clearly this technology exists. This is not science fiction, even though this idea came from a science fiction writer. And despite the fact that there were lots of people with valid reasons who were aghast at the very prospect of it, I gotta say, I don't know that it's that bad of an idea. I don't know that I really think it's all that bad. What do you think about this? Now, barcodes could be messy, of course, but it wouldn't give a lot of work to tattoo parlors. That notwithstanding, the idea of being able to track someone or anyone's movements, does this sound like an egregious affront to our liberty and freedom as Americans or just citizens of Earth in general? Or is this the kind of thing that you think, I think it's okay? I would like to know what you have to say about exactly this topic, and I want you to post it up over on our Facebook fan page. You can drop it off on Google+. We visit over there. Or if you want to send it to me on Twitter, @TheDaddyOnBoard is where I'd like to hear you chime in about where you think about this idea of tracking devices and or scannable barcodes. There was in addition to which, let me see if I can find for you the article where I was reading about this. I guess it was over on Stroller Derby, about military applications and things like that, some other ideas related to that. That didn't really interest me. I'm not really interested in any of that. I think there are other more intriguing or more practical applications than, like, figuring out who got blown apart by a grenade on the battlefield. I realize that's a very serious thing for some people. Like, that's probably their job, is they have to identify those body parts. But that doesn't really impact me. Let me know how it impacts you. If I get some interesting feedback, I'll share it with you next week on the Dob. But before I move on to the blogosphere and your little victories, parents, let's talk for a moment about the kind of panic that we could do without. If, like me, you're a professional wrestler, and you're often in messy locker rooms, and you have that awful moment where you can't locate your phone, well, let me tell you, there's something out there to remove this from your life. Ladies, and I know that you're all ladies in my listening audience, if you ever put your purse down only to discover it's not where you thought you left it, there's that momentary panic we could all do without. Perhaps you've misplaced your keys or your laptop bag or whatever that case might be. The device that you need, friends, is the Cobra Tag. It's made by our great show sponsors and friends over at Cobra Electronics. And what you do is you take that Cobra Tag sensor, you attach it to your keys, your handbag, your computer bag, or any other item that you want to protect from loss. And the sensor is going to communicate with a free app that you download onto your phone that reminds you if you leave it behind. The Cobra Tag's a two-way finder system. You just tap the button on the Cobra Tag key fob, and it'll ring your smartphone. And if you're looking for your Cobra Tag protected item, you use the phone's application to make the Cobra Tag key fob ring. The powerful Phone Halo application can even be set to lock your phone when you get out of range. You'll never lose your valuables again with the two-way locator system known as the Cobra Tag. And you don't have to just go to Cobra.com to find out more about it. There's plenty of information there. If you want to get one right now, well, great online retailers, for example, Amazon.com right now is offering tremendous savings off the listed retail price of Cobra Tag. If you head over there and act right now, look for it online, Amazon.com, and plenty of other websites, and pick up one for you or someone you know who's also forgetful. And thanks to our friends over at Cobra for sponsoring the show. All right, well, as you can probably guess, during the course of most weeks, I read at least as much about what's going on in the realm of superheroes and comic books as I do about what's going on here in the parentosphere. And one of the things that's actually crossed over between these two things is the fact that recently DC Comics, which is owned by Warner Brothers, and one of the long-standing great comic book companies of the United States, has decided, as part of their recent revamp experiment called the New 52, to repackage a long-storied Golden Age character of theirs as a gay man. The 72-year-old character, Alan Scott, now, of course, in the comics, he's forever youthful, especially after that weird, what was that, Inferno thing where they, like, reset his age by 20 years? Anyway, what I mean by 72-year-old is that he first was published back in 1940 in All-American Comics number 16. The original Green Lantern, Alan Scott, was introduced. And in the original and, you know, ongoing DC mythology, he was married twice. He has children, so on and so forth. But with this new revamped New 52, they've decided to freshen up some of their older characters, and Alan Scott was no exception. And his reintroduction into this new 52 DC universe sees him as a gay man. Now, this, for a lot of people, longtime comic book fans, seems like an affront to what we know of the character. And this goes back to the kind of thing that I just hate about comic books in general, about retroactively altering characters' origins. I think the mistake that a lot of people are making, and this is some of the outrage that's been seen in the blogosphere, is that comic fans in general are not happy about the fact that this character with an established history has had his history eradicated and rewritten. This is no different than, to give you an example, if one day DC just decided that they were retroactively going to make Batman a Chinese guy. I don't hate the Chinese, but I would take umbrage with that. In the same way that if Marvel suddenly decided that to make him more controversial or to grab some headlines that Captain America would be a socialist, I wouldn't like that And that's not because I hate socialists. In the same way that I really don't care for the idea of them repackaging Alan Scott in this way, not because I dislike gay men, but because I feel like they're taking a character that has 72 years of mythology behind him, and for the sake of making a couple headlines or attempting to seem like they're current and relevant, they've decided to do this. In an interview that was also published this week, not necessarily on this topic, though, Joss Whedon, who was behind the summer blockbuster, The Avengers, said one of the difficulties when dealing with the DC characters is that they are relics from a bygone era. And I feel like that's true. And this seems like a really thin attempt to try and be modern and cool and relevant and maybe discussion-worthy, whereas, sadly, Alan Scott, the original Green Lantern, who's a very cool superhero character any way you slice it, is perhaps unfortunately not very discussion-worthy of late. And so it is exactly this topic that has been making the rounds since the announcement about a week ago from DC about this alteration to the existing Alan Scott mythology. In the parent blogosphere over at Dadcentric, recently outed guy Nathan Thornburg wrote about this. He wrote a very interesting blog about this and covered some of the same points that I just discussed there. But in particular, discussed the topic with his daughter. I know several other parents, including loyal dub bobbers that listen to this program, really enjoy the fact that the superhero genre allows an opportunity for them to have a shared interest with their little ones, and I am no different. The fact that my almost 3-year-old son enjoys superheroes much in the same way that I do is a great point of connectivity. I don't know that given his age, and the fact that I don't think he really knows who Alan Scott is, other than to say original Green Lantern, that we really need to go diving into this right this very second. But I do realize there are people out there that might want to address this right now with their kids, and I thought there was a very, very interesting blog. So if you wanted to go over to dadcentric.com, look for Nathan Thornburg's recently published piece, just a day or so old, called My Thoughts on Gay Green Lantern. Sadly, he was not a Green Lantern fan prior to any of this, but maybe the super coolness of Alan Scott's purple green-lined cape will win you over, Nathan. I know people like to bag on that cape, and I just want to say for the record, it's way cooler than Doctor Strange's. I'm glad we got that out of the way. Hey, two blogs turned up over on The Motherload. That's a blog that the New York Times publishes. Sometimes it's over in their style or parenting section. That is written by KJ Del Antonia. Two pieces went up this week, and both of which seem to accrue an enormous amount of comments. Now, one of these pieces in particular is about teasing, and whether or not this needs to be considered like the first step toward bullying. The author puts forth some examples from her own household about the way her children back and forth between the siblings tease each other, the way sometimes the parents tease the children, and everything else that's going on. But this, to me, to distill this whole piece, I'm just going to give you one excerpt from it about the way that this sort of thing is perceived. She writes, quote, "You can call some teasing starter bullying or even bullying outright. The teasers may laugh or even mean very little by it, but the teased don't always see it that way. Research shows that while teasers describe the interactions as lighthearted and fun, those teased often describe the same situation as being malicious and annoying," end quote. Now, certainly there's some people out there that are advocates of what they call pro-social teasing, in that it encourages some healthy social interactions, the ability to laugh at oneself and things like that. Whether or not this has a positive or negative impact or is even a factor in your house whatsoever, I don't know. For example, this isn't something that's particularly relevant to my parenting situation. But if it is to yours, not only is the blog very interesting reading over on Motherload, but so too are the tidal wave of comments that follow from parents who've dealt with this and shared their own experiences with the author. So if that sort of thing sounds like it might be relevant to your parenting experience, head over to nytimes.com, look for the Motherload blog that you'll see there in the style section. I know there's another piece this week as well from the same author. This one is a little bit outside of my sphere, but it might be exceptionally relevant, especially given the enormous number of people using a website called Facebook. Have you heard of that? I didn't really know what Facebook was until like a week or so ago I discovered that someone had made a Facebook account and was pretending to be me. and I had to get people I knew that were on Facebook to report it to get it taken down. Because this person who was impersonating me was not me. And I didn't care for that. You may have heard, even the Wall Street Journal covered this, the idea that Facebook is actively testing some options to create a safe, child-friendly space on their site. Now, what I didn't realize about this, and as I read the article, was that apparently a big deal for parents of children of a particular age is that children want to be on Facebook. It's the, you know, the most visited website on the internet. It has crept into every corner of our culture. This is the way online that people interact socially. But children under 13 are unable to participate. That is, of course, unless they lie about their age. Or perhaps have a parent's assistance, a parent who is complicit in this lying process, to help secure a Facebook for them. Now, there are two points of views that are covered in this piece. And one is, when children feel locked out of this sort of thing, of course, the first thing any kid does is they find a way around it, right? And the way around it right now is that they're deceptive about their age so that they can have a Facebook page and interact with their friends or experience whatever the heck else is going on, impersonating me. So now, obviously, some people are taking umbrage with the idea that do we really need Facebook for children who are under the age of 13, despite the fact that we're acknowledging that many children do lie about their age in order to gain access? Can we really create a safe, a child-friendly, safe version of this site? And I think, ultimately, the author of this blog, KJ D'Antonio, points out the exact right thing about this. The real question we need to consider here is this just a move by the now public company Facebook to draw in more users? And I think that that really hits the nail on the head. There are already, by estimates, between 5 and 7 million children under the age of 13 that do use Facebook. They find ways around the safeguards. But that doesn't really seem to be what this is addressing, even though there are some talk that within the next 12 months they will roll this out, this under 13 version of Facebook. It really does seem that in terms of what the real product of Facebook is, it is their users, and they always need more. And to bring them on at a younger age is really a business move, even if it's being framed as whatever, their responsibility to the public or something else. I agree with that. I think a lot of valid points were raised in this about that for this particular age group, which is something I'm otherwise somewhat ignorant of, because as I mentioned, I'm not really on Facebook. That's somebody else. So you can head over to the Motherlode blog. That, again, once again, is nytimes.com. That's in their style section. I always like to make sure I plug the people whose material I rip off for the daub. Have you heard about these cool cats over at gazelle.com? Let me tell you all about them. They're our great show sponsor. Gazelle's the easy way to sell or recycle your used iPhone, iPad or iPod, your Mac, your smartphone, or other gadget from your home or office. And you can find out what it's worth in just a minute when you go over to gazelle.com. That's G-A-Z-E-L-L-E.com. Now, why do you want to get rid of these used consumer electronics of yours? Well, maybe you want to upgrade to the next greatest gadget that's coming out. Or you want to put some money in your pocket? There's nothing wrong with that. Well, remember, just like when you drive a car off the lot, your gadgets lose value over time. So go to gazelle.com right now to get the best possible offer for the gadget or gizmo lying about your house. It only takes a minute, and the sooner you do it, the more money your gadget is worth. And remember, this is something that's happened to me. If it turns out that the product you send in is actually in better condition than you stated, or if they're currently offering a higher price than at the time that you're quoted, Gazelle pays you the difference. They're very, very honest. It's a streamlined process. You'll find them to be very trustworthy and easy to deal with. That's always been my experience with Gazelle.com, and I wouldn't be talking about them on my podcast if I didn't like them a bunch. You get paid fast. They'll put that check in the mail, put PayPal in your PayPal account, or they give you an extra 5% when you opt for an Amazon.com gift card. You can't go wrong, and the shipping is free. So head over right now and see our friends at Gazelle.com. And if they ask, tell them your pals over at the Grizzly Productions Podcasting Super Network sent you. All right, as promised, I've got your little victories, which we call from our Google Plus page. We also pull these off of our Facebook fan page and from our Twitter account, which, if you didn't know, is at the Daddy On Board. Patrick Hedgecoth checks in. I think this one was over on Google Plus. He writes, I don't really know if it's a parenting victory. However, after having so much fun in Cub Scouts and Boy Scouts, I get to relive that time with my own son, who just became a Wolf Scout after completing his first year as a Tiger Cub. I'm proud to say that he is loving it. And Larry Fleming posted this thereafter. Like the last comment, I got my boys involved in scouting and loved every minute of it. I'm still a scoutmaster. It's good that people are having positive experiences with scouting out there, because there certainly is a lot of negative about the scouting program, as recently covered here on the Dob. April Bagwell checked in. My son just earned his bear and is moving up to Weeblos this coming year. He also loves scouts. I never finished Girl Scouts when I was younger, so it's awesome to see him grow into scouting. I'm also a den leader for the group below him. Good for you, April. And Larry Fleming said this then. Larry, scouting is the best way to promote strong character leadership and self-reliance. Like I tell my scouts, every footprint on the moon was made by an Eagle Scout. The right stuff. John Glenn was also an Eagle Scout. I'm an Eagle Scout myself. And I happen to think that a lot of what's going on right now in scouting, as it relates anyway to their prejudicial stance about leadership and everything else, is to say the least deplorable. Now, while I had a good experience as part of the scouting program myself, I have to say that the philosophies being espoused by the people in charge of the scouting program these days have rendered it such that I would be embarrassed to allow my own son to partake, and he most certainly will not until they grow up and get with the times a little bit. Come on, scouting, get your head out of your rear. This was over on Facebook. Renee Moon Schonard wrote this to me. We took the training wheels off her bike and gave her a running push after a few tries, and yes, a few spills, she got the hang of it. She then goes on to write this. Yes, this is my real name, and it is pronounced show nerd. That's what I said. Most folks don't want to say nerd, so they try show nard, which is debatably worse. Now, I have no problem saying nerd. Renee Moon show nerd. Also from Facebook, Jim Dutcher, longtime Da Bobber, wrote this. Little victory, my 5-year-old graduated preschool and is ready for full kindergarten status in the fall. Congratulations, Jim. And a couple that we yanked from the Twittosphere, including this one from Hort4CY. After 3 miserable nights being up with Junior, 2 late arriving teeth have appeared. It was worth it. And used the hashtag little victories so we could find it nice and easy. And my favorite here from the Mad Turtle writes, my son, the 2-year-old Monkees fan, had to wear his hat to church to be just like the Monkees. Well done. This is a victory for the world at large, the Mad Turtle. Thanks for @tweeting me the daddy on board. That makes it easy to find this kind of stuff. And thanks for sending that photo along as well. That's going to do it for Daddy on Board 91. Other places you can catch me include The Trending Show, where I am the host alongside hostess Natalie Morris. That typically publishes on Sundays. And then I team up with Clayton Morris roughly every Tuesday for the Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe. And of course, anywhere that Chikara's going, chances are I'll be there too. ChikaraPro.com has the full tour schedule for where we're going throughout the balance of the year. Come see me live. I love to meet loyal Dob Bobbers, as well as followers of my other podcasts and ventures. It'd be great to meet you. If I don't see you in the next week, don't worry. I'll see you back here for Daddy on Board 92 in about 7 days. Adios, amigos.